Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 66. All the sixes. 66.
I find it a triumph that we got this far into the podcast. Absolutely. Hey, everybody, it is time once again for another episode of The Shared Desk with special guests. But first, let's introduce ourselves. I am your host, T. Morris.
Hawk Asian. Well, they got that wrong because you're obviously white.
White as driven snow. White as driven snow. And sitting across from me?
A Pip Valentine.
Knowledge is power.
Seize him. Cut his throat. Stop. Wait. I've changed my mind. Let him go. Step back 3 paces. Turn around. Close your eyes. Power.
Yes, power is power,
what
especially
is that
with that
from?
One. Are you? Oh, you just lost a. You lost 10 points from Gryffindor. From Slytherin.
Oh.
That was Game of Thrones, baby.
Oh.
And now, okay. Sitting across from me, our special guests,
Lauren Scribe Harris.
Accidentally locked a man in a particle accelerator.
He's gonna wake up.
He won't. They say he caught a ball yesterday.
Hey,
it's probably just raw reflexes.
And finally, our brand new special guest.
Hi, I'm Scribby.
I may not be an explorer or an adventurer or a treasure seeker or a gunfighter, but I am proud of what I am. I am a librarian. Am a librarian.
I didn't realize you would know that quote.
Oh my God.
She can do that entire speech.
Yeah, I can.
She had it on a shirt in high school.
Man, friggin-tastic. Yes, as you saw, I gave myself the shortest drop-in because I'm obviously outnumbered in the studio today. So I wanted to make sure everybody got epic-sized drop-ins.
Yeah.
I approve. That was lovely.
I'm so flattered to be the Kate McKinnon.
when I was thinking, what's good for Lauren? What's good for Lauren? What's good? Oh, yeah. Particle accelerator. I'm going to spend an entire afternoon just harvesting that entire clip until somebody yanks it offline.
Uh-huh.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 66 of The Shared Desk. We obviously have house guests. We got a lot to talk about in whatever time we decide, however we're going to talk about it. But first, let's talk real quick about what brings the two of you here. So, Scribe, Scribby, what's on the docket? What brings you to... Oh, and Scribby, welcome to our home and our studio for the first time. So what brings you guys...
Our cat-covered studio.
Our cat-covered studio. What brings you up up this way?
Well, Scribby and I recently hosted T and Pip at my house. I think you guys might remember LaurenCon.
LaurenCon.
Vaguely through a haze of vodka.
Through a haze of vodka and sincerity.
I'm going to do a quick impersonation. I'm going to do a quick impersonation of Scribby.
Oh, no.
I swear I've been putting vodka in this. I can't taste it. That's really good vodka. But I swear I've been pouring a lot into it.
It was very good vodka.
We have some in the house.
Yeah.
Merlarky Distilleries at merlarky.com. Anyway.
But around that time, I think T realized that neither Scribby nor I had been to the Maryland Renaissance Fair, though
That's right.
we had cut our teeth at the North Carolina Renaissance Fair in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were invited to come up to Manassas and hang out with you two at the Renaissance Fair in Maryland.
More so hang out with Boom, because while yes, she is 12, I wasn't ready.
She's also 12.
She's also 12.
While she's 12, she's also 12.
Yeah, and there was quite a gaggle full of people there, and I did not feel comfortable. It was different at the Strasbourg Railway Festival because that's a smaller event, a little more intimate.
And we knew a lot of the people.
Exactly.
And for this one, you had to be able to read a map.
And
we got lost.
And also, the area for the Strasbourg Railway Festival is maybe an eighth of a size of the Maryland mm-hmm. Renaissance Festival. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. We just needed some companions.
Yes.
And wow, were we ever just chucked out of the pool? I mean, boom. You want to come home with us? No! All righty then. Hope you've enjoyed yourself at the Renaissance Festival.
You're welcome. Shut up.
All right, so... I think it is, though? I think it was what the Scribe and Scribby, how they packed for the Renaissance Festival.
We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline,
5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid, a salt shaker half full of cocaine, a whole galaxy of multicolored uppers, downers, screamers, laughers, also a quarter tequila, quarter rum, case of beer, pint of raw ether, 2 dozen amyls.
Yeah, we were kicked out of the Boy Scouts. We were too prepared.
Now, we should say that we usually use that drop-in for
our writers.
No, for writers.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, writers.
Well, writer, list. Editor, come on. But, what are you going to do?
But Scribby is actually one of my...
Yes, one
former
of your peeps.
Clan. I think once you're a librarian, you're a librarian for life, right?
It's true. We're the Marines.
So I'm assuming then I have to add in that clip somewhere something about having a ball gag, maybe a gimp suit, something like that. I've heard about some of the librarian parties.
I don't know. I've never been to the ALA.
Oh, you should go. It's a
blast.
But
I've been to New Zealand's version, and librarians are some interesting people. People would not assume too much about librarians.
Tell the John Green story.
I was going to say, John Green has this great story where he was at ALA, and as he was walking out of the convention in the morning, there were two librarians in full librarian gear with the flat shoes and the cardigans and like the
tweed. Buns.
The tweed and the buns. And they were propped up against a pillar, each with a half full martini glass in their hands, slumped against each other. And he's like, yeah, librarians party hard.
Yeah, they do. When the bun comes down.
That's right.
Yeah, when the bun comes down.
Tackle one grapple.
and maybe
we should just say book people, dear readers.
Yes. Yeah, it does seem to be book people, right? Editors, agents, they
party harder than anyone.
Yeah.
Inappropriate.
I agree. And what a segue, because you know what we're here to talk about? We're here to talk about young adult fiction.
You would not want to be staring like that at me.
Yeah, so... young adult. The reason why we're bringing up young adult is for several reasons. This is the time where Pip and I turn to our resident experts. So I'd like to go.
We're babies.
We're babies in the young. We're even youngsters. We're even more youngsters in young adult than our two guests here. I'm going to go on ahead and while Scribby composes herself, I'm going to turn to Lauren Scribe Harris. You've written young adult fiction before. How many titles have you written so far?
Let's see. Well, including the ones that have not seen the light of day.
They can't.
Four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, Scribby, you've got some background in young adult as a librarian, correct?
I do.
And what exactly is that? Can you expand on that?
Yeah, after my first job as a librarian was a teen librarian, so I was in charge of all the collections and the teen programming and bonding with them and finding out their secret ways and
the hand
no.
signals.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, oh,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, oh,
no.
Yeah, yeah,
no.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, John. No.
Yes. You were that person.
And so you learned about memes and other stuff to communicate with them.
I watched all their YouTube channels and I read all their books.
You sat down with teens and said, so tell me, what do you want in your fiction? Just tell me. Mm-hmm. Tell me exactly what it is you want.
Oh, I didn't get crickets though. They're so
really?
Chatty.
Oh, I better stop
so
that then.
So chatty.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Inappropriate.
That was an inappropriate clip. I apologize. But that's great though. And so... the reason we're coming to you all for advice on what we did is because just recently we premiered young adult fiction at the beginning of the month in October.
Yeah.
And then just this weekend at the Maryland Renaissance Festival.
We took it out for the first time.
Took it out for the first time in print.
And sold it all.
And sold every one of those copies.
So exciting.
Yeah. So the title in question is called The Curse of the Silver Pharaoh. And that is available on Amazon exclusively right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it is available in print.
It is available in print
now. And audiobook was coming.
Audiobook's coming. So, Pip, do you want to go on ahead and describe what it is?
I'll explain it a little bit. So, it is based on the Ministry 7, who were in the Ministry adult books, and they help out Eliza and Wellington with various things. But for me, when you watched Sherlock... Well, I watched Red Sherlock Holmes. Mm. I've done both. When you see the Baker Street Irregulars help Sherlock, I always wondered, what are they doing the rest of the time? Apart from delivering messages, what are they up to? And I decided that we should be writing about them. And this idea has been percolating a while because in The Phoenix Rising, we actually mention Verity Fitzroy.
Yes.
As being a previous member of the Ministry 7. So we had that little Easter egg there, and then we finally got around to writing it. It took like a few years for it to come out.
But I remember you were writing it at the first like Smokey Writers.
The very first Smokey Writers.
Like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing the beginning of the opening chapter.
Yes, yes. Which still remains the opening chapter, actually. Strangely enough, that, that very seldom actually happens. But it is, Verity is a, she was a child of privilege. Her parents were archaeologists and an engineer. And so she got to travel around the world with them. And then one day when she was about 8, they were killed mysteriously and her house was burnt to the ground.
Let's not give away too much.
Yes.
Not give away but too much.
No, that was kind of in there. Anyway, so she ends up with the Ministry 7 in London and she has some curious abilities with mechanics. And she we actually have a short story where she discovers the uncle, her father's best friend, that was supposedly killed in Egypt is alive and she sees him.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. So that was that the precarious child.
Yes.
Or was that Merry Christmas Rarity Fitzroy?
No,
that was the precarious child.
That was the precarious child.
Which I believe is a parsec winner.
Yes, it is.
Because it beat me for the right. parsec that year.
So Verity's already beaten you.
Yeah. Not a shock.
So in this one, they end up pursuing a variety of leads that may be connected with Uncle Octavius, and they end up in a academy for gifted engineering children. Basically, the Clankertons of the future are being raised.
It's the PsyOps Shield Academy.
I actually gave it the catchphrase: if Hermione and young Indiana Jones went to school together, this would be the novel.
I'd read that so hard.
And so they're at least on one side, they're being sent to the school by the ministry because they think something's going on there, and there have been disappearing archaeologists from this dig that discovered the Silver Pharaoh, and the Silver Pharaoh then went missing. So
and that's where we should stop because you're giving away way too much of the book.
That's on the blurb in the back.
And do you remember the just to practice it, the name of the Silver Pharaoh is
Susenus.
There you go. She's had to practice that quite Susenus. A bit. That and Mechanications, which was the other book that we took to the
Red Fair. When you make up words, you have to learn how to say them.
So what we're bringing in our guests on is to actually critique our approach to young adult, because we want to make sure that we're getting it right. This is our first time out of the box. And what we're using is a blog post that Pip had read over and said, oh no, this is a great blog post. It was 5 things I learned while writing young adult fiction.
Oh.
And you can find that at tmorris.com. So the first thing
we're just gonna Donald Trump this and go wrong.
Exactly.
or I hope not.
Correct.
Which is a word I don't think he ever used in the debates. One time. Which was, you have small hands, Mr. Trump? Correct. Oh, sorry.
What? No, it was something. It was it's something
the,
about Hillary.
This is not that kind of podcast. What the hell are we doing?
Pull away.
What are we doing? All right. So the first thing I learned was don't treat young adults like kids. And what I mean by that is you don't necessarily want to... Well, first off, the average reader of young adult, ironically, is not a young adult.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're young in heart, but usually I want to say that the young adult crowd is between the 30 and even the 50-year-old mark, but there are still 10 to 18-year-olds that fall into the young adult category. Folks like our daughter, Boom. And you want to write to their level, but you don't necessarily want to write down to them.
Talk down to them.
Mm-hmm. You don't want
to... Teenagers love to be talked down to.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Wrong.
Wrong. And I think the harder people to read are not necessarily teenagers, but tweenagers, which is what, again, our Boom is at. And when I mean talk down to them, I think that was something that J.K. Rowling got right, even in the very first Harry Potter story. In the first Harry Potter novel, whichever one you want to call it, the Philosopher's Stone or the Sorcerer's Stone, she managed to keep the language and the plot simple, but never once did I feel like I thought to myself, I'm reading a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, when I tried to read, I tried to reread The Hobbit, and we were reading it to Boom when she was even younger, when she was like in 5 and 6. And she was enjoying the story, but it was a tough read for us.
Yes.
Because it felt like it was really talking down to mm-hmm. me. And I know people were like, oh, that's one of the sacred cows of literature. I'm like, yeah, not that easy to read.
You know what you do with sacred cows?
You slaughter them and turn them into filet mignon?
Yep. I will say there are a lot of authors who write for adults and then try to move down to YA. And
it does not work. And they know, like, the teens can tell you right off the bat.
They can smell it.
Yeah, and it's always funny to me because I always want to grab them and be like, guys, just write the book you want to write and just any sex scene, just pop that puppy right out.
We're going to get to that in a second.
But, like, you don't have to change the language so much. No. You don't have to change anything else.
Well, that's good. We didn't
write the book.
No,
yeah.
It's like it's just the age of the characters, maybe the complexity of the plot because they like to be more fast-paced.
We're going to get to that in a second as well.
And also the word count is usually smaller, right?
Yeah,
that's to do with pacing. Yeah.
One of the things I say in the blog post is they being tweens and teens, deal with politics, emotions, and difficult choices in morality. Unlike elementary school, where friendships and relationships are very much black and white with clear definitions, tweens and teens discover various shades of gray. Not necessarily 50, but way more, way more
they shouldn't be reading.
Shades of gray.
That is a terrible
and that's what you write to, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you start getting the people who don't necessarily fit into the good or the bad.
Mm-hmm.
In teen, we always like to laugh about the bad boy. But you get that bad boy character that it's like, well, he's got a ton of problems, but he's in his base state, he's trying to be a good person. And it's not something you see so much in the kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we lose it a bit in adults as well sometimes, which is really frustrating.
Yeah.
I think it's a time when a lot of people are learning about morality and learning about the complexity of other people and the complexity within themselves. So it's a good time or a good way to explore those other shades of gray. And especially you get a lot of teenagers and younger adults in their early 20s that are very much attracted to the villains in things. That's where, like, the cult of the Draco Malfoy.
The Diet Coke of villains.
The Diet Coke of villains, yeah. And where you get these people that really, really love the bad guys and have sympathy for the devil, so to speak, because they're learning about all of these different shades of gray, and they want to have sympathy for these characters, and they want them to be... Almost a lot of times I think they want them to be the main character. They want the main character to have trouble so that they can sort of begin to understand that those shades of gray within themselves.
Okay. Now, going back to something you had mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. Lauren, was the second point. While you don't want to talk down to your readers, this is the second point from my blog post. While you don't want to talk down to your readers, you also don't want to go, ironically with the drop-in, Game of Thrones on them, keep the story focused. Now, Pip, what were your thoughts on that when we were talking about putting together The Curse of the Silver Pharaoh and things of those nature?
Well, we kept it very... I mean, it's mostly from Verity's point of view.
Right.
We have some asides because the seven get broken up.
Mm-hmm.
They get split in two, basically.
Yeah.
So we do have another point of view character, but it's pretty much Verity's story.
Mm-hmm.
And what she discovers along the way.
Right. So, and what I meant by that was that most, and I do stress that, most YA go from one POV. Like Harry Potter, it was all Harry. And then with Katniss, you know, you had got Katniss. Mm-hmm. And then there's M from Scott Sigler's Alive, Triss from Divergent. It was mm-hmm. all from their POV. And then you go to Game of Thrones, and you're going with Brianna of Tarn. You're going to Cersei. You're going to Ned Stark until he loses his head. And then
spoiler alert!
Like, if you haven't figured that out by now, look, Sean Bean was in the role. Duh. You know, you got so many different characters and so many different points of view. You really need a scorecard to keep with that.
Right.
Do you think that is also inherent in YA?
I think probably the most points of view that I've seen in a YA at this point might be between 4 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And those are usually...
Wow, that's a lot more than I would have gone with. But wow, okay. Which piece was that?
So there are two extremely popular YAs right now. One of them is by Sabaa Tahir. And the first one is called Ember in the Ashes. And it starts out as a two-person with two different narrators.
Okay.
And you swap back and forth in that one. Maggie Stiefvater also had her very popular Raven Boys series, which has five narrators and then jumps back and forth between a bunch of different minor characters, like some villains, some side characters, and you get a couple of different points of view from there. So those two series both have that going on with them.
Okay.
The one by Sabaa Tahir actually ends up in the second book adding another POV. So she ends up with at least three
As of the second book.
And what about your fiction? Do you have multiple POVs? Or do you just keep it between one to two? How do you approach it?
The YAs that I have out right now, the ministry. Wow.
Thanks for that.
The Mill Road Academy Exorcist series, that's in first person with a single narrator. Okay. So that one is just one person. The other ones that I wrote, when I initially wrote my Mark Masters trilogy, it was supposed to be YA. And that's on the back burner now. But that one had three main POVs and a couple of drop-ins from others. That was in third. And then the other one that I wrote, Hellhound, is a first person again. So they do tend to be scaled back. And I think on the whole, you're correct in that you do like to... most YAs are scaled back to between one and two POVs, but you do have the exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you found as well, Scrappy?
Yeah, most of them are first person. And teens, I think, they talk about it in YA a lot, but I think it's important in all writing, but particularly in YA, the voice that they need. You know, they have a very strong voice. They tend to like to be first person.
There's a lot of present tense as well.
A lot of present tense.
They want
tense.
That immediacy. Mm-hmm. And that's some of what has to happen, or has to happen, but that's some of what I think is it goes part and parcel with YA, is that you have that fast pace, and you also want that immediacy, but you also want to catch the attention and sympathy of the teens very quickly. And a lot of how people do that is making it first person and present tense. It's almost a shortcut to sympathy because you have both that immediate time sense and that immediacy of it being in first person.
Well, and starting it fast. I mean, a lot of you mentioned before that a lot of the readers of YA are actually adults. And what I hear again and again from them is, oh, yeah, I like reading adult books, but I love reading YA because one chapter in, you're already doing the thing. Mm-hmm. They don't have this, like, let's take eight chapters to set up this small town. Yeah. You just go for it.
But enough about Stephen King. So,
I'm sorry, Stephen. I love you.
Which brings me to something else, since we're now getting into the characters. Man, this is a really tight show here. the third thing I figured out is while your heroes are kids, they are not necessarily prodigies. This is something that's always bugged me a bit about young adult fiction. I felt like Joe
the chosen one.
Yeah, Joe got it right with, in my opinion, Joe got it right with Harry, and I'll talk about that breakdown in a second. But while I have not, and spoiler alert, and here's my true confession, I have not read a lot of young adult, but I've seen some of the movie adaptations of young adults, and I've heard mixed about how well they get it. But man, I find it a little annoying. In The Maze Runner, he's the chosen one. Divergent. Wow. We're going to round up all the pretty people in post-apocalyptic who have perfect makeup and great skin, and we're going to make her the chosen one. And then, not so much with The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games, Katniss is very rough around the edges, and I dig that. And so I feel like I'm bringing it back with that. But then we recently watched The Fifth Wave. Wow, what a piece of poo this movie was. It was total piece of poo.
And I haven't seen the movie.
Oh my God, what a train wreck. And I'm sitting there going, these aliens are working way too hard to take over the planet. They're working way too effing hard. And again, this one girl, it was like, in like 20 minutes, she figures out how to work automatic weapons. And I'm like, wait a minute. And we now bring us to where I think Joe got it right. The thing I love the most about Harry... And I'll bring up the... Yes, I did read all the Harry Potter books. So, so hang on a minute. This one's for you. Anyone?
No.
Yeah, no. I did. I did. No, swear to God, no. I did. I did. No, I did. Yeah, no. Yeah, I did.
No, John, no.
And I did. and the thing, my favorite of all the books, and people are shocked when I tell them this, book 5, Order of the Phoenix.
Interesting.
And the reason why people didn't like it was the reason why I liked it. People were saying Harry was a brat. People were saying Harry was arrogant. They were saying he was a mouthy teenager. I'm sitting there going, look at the previous 4 books and everything he's gone through. And the other thing is, Harry, yes. Is Harry the chosen one? Yes. Does he like being the chosen one? Hell no. And he reacts to it, finally, after 5 freaking books. And on top of that, he is not a prodigy. He's a jock. Ron, he's not a prodigy. He's really skilled. He's really skilled in 2 things. I mentioned this in the blog post. he's really good at strategy because he kicks ass in wizard chess. Mm-hmm. Then on top of that, he's connected. His dad works in the Ministry of Magic. So when it comes to politics, Ron's on it. Then you got Hermione. Hermione is the smartest of the bunch. We've established that. She has got all the book smarts. But when it comes to taking action, she's kind of gun shy, mm-hmm. except for when she punches Draco, which is freaking
slaps Draco. She slaps him.
I prefer the punching, though. I would give out. I like
the slap.
I like the punch.
The slap is an insult.
But I think, but again, that's the thing is that these kids are not necessarily prodigies. So, did we get that right, or you know what do you all think about that?
I definitely agree with that. I will have to defend Triss from Divergent.
Go for it.
Mm-hmm. She is Please. Not a prodigy. She is one of a couple of people who is able to, who has the Divergent okay. mindset that allows what that is, and I won't spoil that. But as far as her being dauntless, that the badass group, she's not a badass when she goes in. She has to be taught everything, and she has to claw her way up and fight it. And you get most of that first book where she is the smallest person in there. She gets clobbered from the very beginning, and she's basically trying to fly under the radar and not get noticed because she knows she will die. And, you know, she ends up, if anything, it's the love interest that is kind of the one that is a little bit too good to be true.
Right.
But a lot of, I think, a lot of the YAs, I want to defend this idea, though, of there being a chosen one and there being these people who, a lot of teens do have problems with that. And they'll say, this person is so, like, too good to be true. They're a Mary Sue or things like that. They get called.
You get that in the wider you get fantasy that,
but at,
genre.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's the book is about them. They're allowed to be a little bit special, you know, but, you know.
Otherwise, they're a minor character.
Yeah. Otherwise, why is the book about them?
And yet, one of the things that Joe, I thought, I know I keep calling her Joe, J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, when she comes over to our house, we just call her Joe.
Yeah, you're like this.
But one thing she did get right was really, and there was a huge debate, and there's still a huge debate online about it, who was really the chosen one? Was the chosen one really...
Neville.
Yeah, what about Neville, who was a minor character, but in the end, he's kicking ass. Now, granted, if you want to say who's the chosen one, look at the two actors playing him. Neville leveled up. I'm sorry.
He did. Well, but
not to say anything bad against Daniel Radcliffe. He's a handsome young man, but I'd ship Neville in a heartbeat. Yeah. I'd ship him harder than the USS Constitution. I'm sorry. Did I say something wrong? I'm sorry. Did I break a bar?
Inappropriate.
Okay. There well, we that's go.
I just want to address that point real quick. The who's the chosen one thing. Voldemort chose the chosen one.
Yeah. That's true.
It could have gone either way. And Joe has actually said in interviews that it could have been both, and Harry basically just had an edge more of the natural knack for it, but Neville could have done it too.
Voldemort chose him. He got touched literally by Voldemort, and they're brought on.
But it could have been Neville as well.
So what about your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean,
I saw you shaking your head a couple of times during my movie reviews. Like I said, I wanted to get into Divergent, but I'm like, these people are way too pretty for the post-apocalypse.
Well, that's probably a fault.
That's Hollywood.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, with the
have you seen Veronica Roth? My God, she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Fifth Wave, we'll probably touch again on romance later. I assume that's coming. Is that coming in your blog?
Kind of coming.
Okay, well, I will say Fifth Wave was that book that we were reading along, and the teens all saw it when you're reading along and they're giving their book review and going, yeah. And then at one point, she wakes up and she's in some guy's house, and the last thing she remembers is he held a gun on her, and, you know, you're thinking, oh, God, we're all going to die. And she stops a moment and is like, oh, but look at his abs. every teenager who read the book was like, I was with ya.
Until then.
At a certain point, you wake up and you've been knocked unconscious and you're standing there, and the guy who had the gun when you last remembered, it's like, I don't care how nice his abs are.
But no. Abs.
But abs, yeah. Right.
Hell yeah.
No.
Abs, bro.
No.
Well, and the other thing is, Kat...
Brahim, I've been working out during the post-apocalypse.
That's right. I know I hit you with a gun, but look how pretty I am.
I'm all wet and slippery.
Inappropriate.
As far as Katniss goes, I will say, I think one of the reasons that teens were so drawn to her is that she did not enter the Hunger Games with everyone going, you will be the one that changes it
you
all.
You are awesome.
They're just you're screwed.
Her name was not even drawn. The fates did not intercede. Right. She put herself on the path. And I think it's a lot different from your Harry Potters and your names being pulled from the hat and it's written in the stars. And Katniss was just like, no, I don't know what else to do except the right thing. And you just go, oh, bless you, child. I love you.
Right. And by the sound of that segue, we are actually breaking this show up into two segments because that's how much we had to say about writing young adult fiction. It's been great having Scribe and Scribby here in the studio. And what we're going to do is we're going to go on ahead and in 2 weeks come back to the second half of this conversation. But we're going to go on ahead and stay with the stream of conscious that we were having during the show, which is telling you what we were doing off the clock. So let's take you back to the Maryland Renaissance Festival here on the Shared Desk. Writers off the clock. So what do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't know.
Idea.
We actually had a good idea this weekend. It was the Maryland Renaissance Festival, and we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Huzzah!
Yeah, huzzah! Yeah, this was actually Pips and my first return to the Ren Faire since 2006.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's been 10 years. It's been 10 years since we've been there. It was Pips' second trip to the United States, and we were doing this. I remember calling it the Pimp the Kiwi Tour. Pimp my Kiwi Tour. And we went to three.
I wasn't a Kiwi back then.
No, I would watch that show, though. That's great.
Pimp that Kiwi.
Pimp that Kiwi.
Except I'm picturing an actual Kiwi.
Yeah. Yes.
In cool shades and a jacket.
Pretty much. It was very close to that. And the first place we went to was Barnes & Noble, the power plant at Barnes & Noble.
That was terrible.
Terrible. We crashed and burned there.
Aww.
Then we went to Barnes & Noble in Harrisonburg, Virginia, near my alma mater, James Madison University, and we did better there than we anticipated because we were talking to a bunch of college students.
Oh.
But they were college students that said, no, we brought some money for books. So we sold a few books there. Then we ended at the Maryland Renaissance Festival, and that was where Pip sold out of books.
Nice.
And we only
Back then we only had two books.
Well, we had three books. Legacy of Moravi and a Moravi, and then Pip had Chasing the Bard.
She
rocked it. So here we were, 10 years later, and we had the five ministry books. We had Verity Fitzroy's first book.
And we had Magical
Mechanications. And we had Ministry Protocol. So we had gone from having three books to having eight books.
Wow.
And we did really well. Pip, how did we do?
Yeah, we sold out on Verity. We sold out on Magical Mechanications, and we sold out on Phoenix Rising, which is the first book, so people were picking that up.
It was really nice to be able to see that. Now, we would talk more about that, but I think we're going to save that for...
Yeah, let's talk about the Ren Faire, because...
We're going to talk about the actual Renaissance Festival itself. So this was y'all's first visit to Revel Grove. What did you think?
It was huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
It was huge.
Huge. Well, and there was a lot more uphill, downhill stuff than I expected. But
I didn't do a lot of walking. My legs are killing me. I don't know how I did this for seven seasons at the Ren Faire.
And it's funny because we're used to the North Carolina Renaissance Fair in Charlotte that has the same sort of permanent structures,
right?
But is much smaller. It's probably half the size. Just in square footage.
And it's like a flat field.
And it's a flat
and it's a linear path. You walk down one side, curve around, and up the other, and you've seen the Ren
Faire. It's a big horseshoe.
Yeah.
Whereas this one...
There were alleyways.
We had a map, and we also had Doc Coleman as a guide.
And we still got lost.
Yeah.
We still got lost, yeah. But, so we were very lucky to have been met at the gates by podcaster Doc Coleman.
SwimmingCatStudios.com.
SwimmingCatStudios.com. And he met us at the gate as soon as we walked in, because that's his home fair,
mm-hmm. yeah.
as well.
Yeah, so he knows that very well.
And he knows it very well.
So here's the thing about Revel Grove. I worked there for 7 seasons as an actor, and honestly, the path once you figure it out, mm-hmm. is not that hard. It is a giant circle. However, it's a circle that's got several, like you said, alleyways, mm-hmm. and once you get the loop, the outer loop, fine. Getting into the inner loop is actually a little easier. Mm-hmm. I think the trickiest bit is actually where we were at Page After Page. You can find them on Facebook. We got the link there, and right by Page After Page, it connects with 3 of these different alleyways. Mm-hmm. Alleyway 1 takes you towards the food court. Alleyway 2 takes you four alleyways. Alleyway 1 takes you to the food court, which eventually takes you back to the jousting arena.
I think you kind of need a bunch of signs that just say, thou art here.
We actually had several times during the day, we had several people stop
the
and
racetrack?
Go, where's this, where's this, where's yeah. this? And I said, oh, you go this way for this, you go this way for that, blah, uh-huh. and so forth. So you've got alleyway 1, which takes you back towards the jousting field via the food court. Packed food court. Uh-huh. Then you've got alleyway number 2. Alleyway number 2 takes you back to the main entrance. So you go through more vendors, but you also go through more like tiny food shops, but also things like that. But that will eventually take you back to the original vendor. And that will also take you right by White Hart Tavern, which is where the end of the day pub sing is. Alleyway 3 takes you, which I think is called Stubtoe Lane. Mm-hmm. That's the one where it's just vendors and the masseuse is back there. Then you go to alleyway 4. Alleyway 4 will take you by the Globe Theater as well as the Wine Garden. Mm-hmm. And that's just by where Page After Page is located. I haven't even talked about it. If you kept going past Page After Page, you will go by the Rock Wall and some other vendors. Tall Toad is there. So is the Half Moon Clothier. Yeah, it's a huge freaking festival.
We didn't make it to everything.
No, biggest one on the East Coast. It's the biggest one on the East Coast.
Well, and some of the stuff that I noticed was some of the acts were, they were able to fit in like the Wheel of Death.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was really cool. So there were some like full-blown circus-type acts that were set up there that you couldn't fit those into the Carolina Renaissance Fair.
I know Puke and Snot were there, and this was an offshoot of the original Puke and Snot, because when I was there 20 years ago
as an
actor.
What is Puke and Snot?
Puke and Snot basically are a light combat show, heavy vaudeville comedy style show.
Oh,
and they're fun. I mean, there was another group that used to be around called Hack and Slash. Mm-hmm. And Hack and Slash was more stage combat, mm-hmm. less comedy. These guys are the opposite. And Puke and Snot were one of the first. Sadly, one of the I can't remember which one, but one of the two originators of the act has passed away. But the other guy has basically taken the act and said, I'm going to franchise it. Mm-hmm. And so they have these other...
Franchise Puke and Snot.
Multiple pukes, multiple snots.
And these guys are great. And I also noticed when I was walking by, when I actually got a chance to walk away from the booth for a bit, Shakespeare Scum was still performing. They're an in-house Maryland Renaissance Festival troupe. And they basically do truncated comedy versions of Shakespeare shows. And they're hysterical.
I'd love to see the comedy Hamlet.
They actually have one. Oh, no, wait. No, I'm sorry. I take that back. I attempted to write a Shakespeare Scum. I wanted to write one called, I think it was called Hamlet 2 Return to Denmark. And what it was going to be was Shakespeare Scum was going to rewrite Hamlet as a horror movie.
Oh, God.
And it was going to be a teen horror movie where Hamlet was, in fact, the character
the emo.
He was wearing the white mask. He was basically going to be Michael Myers. And I remember writing something where Ophelia was like, oh, I'm stuck in this room in the castle all by myself, separated from my friends, and all the lights are out. I hope nothing bad happens. You know? And I never got deeper into it. Mm-hmm. But
the world mourns.
The world mourns that, yeah.
Hamlet.
So,
to Denmark.
So there are all these different. So you got all these different things. What were the things that stuck out? I mean, I know you guys did some shopping with Boom and things like that. Mm-hmm. What were some of the vendors that you were kind of blown away by? Because you guys dropped some serious coin yesterday.
Yeah, we dropped a goodly amount of ducats.
Bigly amount of ducats.
Bigly ducklets.
Yeah, so I will say we've been going to Renaissance fairs since we were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I, and I think you, have never had a full Ren Faire costume. We've always been going to Ren Faires like dressed in things we made or borrowed or bought one bodice but then paired with stuff that we whipped through our sewing machine. And we were always kind of cobbled together a bit and poor. We'd walk around the Renaissance fair going, everything's so pretty.
And so
can't
expensive.
Have any of it. Yeah.
But now we're grown-ups with grown-up jobs.
We have professional jobs and professional monies.
What was the line you used with the wardrobe
people?
Oh,
there is a shop called something kilt.
Wolf's
Head or Wolf's Glen. Wolf's,
help me out here,
I
folks.
I think it was Wolf's Head, wasn't it?
I
wasn't
said.
There. I was by the car going, where are these ladies?
Well, we're going to be in the show. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, they were fantastic. We walked in, we start looking around. It's very Scottish-inspired.
They're like a kiltier
garb. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we're looking around, and the woman comes up, and she's like, oh, is there anything I can help you with? And it's like, yeah, this is pretty, and that's pretty, and this is nice. And I'm kind of looking around, and she's like, okay, well, let me know if I can help you. And I said, I want to look like Claire.
And just come out and say it.
I gave no context. I didn't go like, you know, from Outlander, the book series that I love, and I've been watching the show. I just
all
I
you
wanna,
said was,
I want to look like Claire. And she
what
goes,
did she say?
Oh, sweetie, I got you. And next thing I know, she's pulling hoop skirts and petticoats
and I'll give
stays.
You some, I'll give you some good context. Diana
Gabaldon.
Yeah. Gabaldon. Diana Gabaldon actually did a signing. And a reading at the Maryland Renaissance Festival this year. She's been doing it, I think.
Wait, this year she was here?
She was here this year, and she was here the previous year.
Oh, no.
You just broke Scribby.
As far as I know, she may be coming back. Because I know,
Diana,
that,
I love you.
I know that at page after page, Thomas said, yeah, I sold 800 books that day.
Wow. Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that in our next show. But but yeah, they...
So they know.
They know.
Well,
in fact,
when we go for our fun weekend, make sure it's a weekend when Diana's there so that Scribby can, so that Scribby
we'll
can
have
go.
To
so
we
can
get
watch
there
Scribby
early.
Fangirl?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll be fine.
Scribby fangirling is precious.
I run out of words, but have lots of flails.
But you guys didn't get to see anything like the human chess game. You didn't see any of the jousting.
Well, for most of it, we had Little Boom.
She would have loved the human chess game.
She wasn't into it.
We were planning on going to it, and
really?
Then I took her to the privies, and while we were there, she turned and said, I don't really want to do that. And I was like, okay, how about I tell Scribe that we don't really want to do that? And she's like, okay. So I went to Scribe and was like, hey, I'm not feeling like it.
Yeah. And I kind of
she
knew.
She wraps she's people a, around. She,
no. Teen librarian means I'm always willing to be the party pooper on their behalf. I'm fine with
she's
it.
She's going to be a politician.
And of course, when Scribby sidles up to me and goes, so, we're not really feeling the human chess game.
We took a vote.
I read that as, okay, Boom's tired. We've run her through a lot of shops. She got to do a lot of fun things. Like, she got to go down the big slide.
Yep.
She got to shoot bow and arrows.
Yes.
She and I went on
an elephant.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Okay.
And
so
she did the Jacob's ladder.
She did a lot of stuff
before
that. And we basically went through.
And then
we
she wanted her dragons.
And then she wanted her dragon. Well, we tired her out because we were kind of going into every single shop.
Got it.
And I think she started to get bored. And she really wanted to go spend her money on her elephant.
See,
on
this
her
is
dragon.
What confuses me. I didn't mention the shops because when it usually comes to getting her to do any sort of shopping, this is our daughter. We can't get her to do that.
No.
And then we wind up buying her clothes and she's like, oh, hell no. And then it's like, look, if you don't go shopping with us, we're going to pick out your clothes.
Because you need to have clothes.
And yet, with you two, suddenly she gets all girly and she's like, oh, yeah, I want to go in.
Well, she wasn't getting all girly. Here's the thing is that Scribby and I were going into all the shops.
Yeah.
And I think she was getting a little tired of that.
Oh, wow.
So,
but when
so
you
think,
go and buy a dragon, I'm in there. I'm,
yeah.
That's all.
So we
went and sniffed all the incense with us.
Yeah. There you go. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So some of the stuff that was a little bit more interactive, I think she had fun with. But Scribby and I wanted to buy garb, and she wasn't feeling the getting a costume thing.
And she'd already bought her dragon.
Yeah.
But, well,
she had a dragon.
The dragon shop was right as you walk in. So, you know, first, the big eyes, you see everything, and then look, there are stuffed frickin' dragons over there. How cool is
that?
Well
placed.
Well played. Well played, Rebel Girl.
And so I think as we walked around and got treats and did fun things,
nothing was better than those dragons.
Wow.
And so
I'm done. I got a dragon.
You know, and when you're a kid and you start to get tired and you're just like, okay, I want to do this, and then I want to go sit down, and I want my iPad, and I want to tune out for a while. And I think that was where she was.
That's where she dropped us off at the
And
paper,
that's
page,
where,
yeah.
Yeah, and so we went and we got her dragon, and then we brought her back to go hang out with the rents and sit down for a bit, which I think was what she...
She was actually kind of working the table as
She happily sold your book.
Yeah, she was hysterical.
One day we'll be able to go and have fun and just leave her to sell the books.
If anybody hesitated in front of our table, Boom would lean forward and go, this is the first in a YA series. And I'm like, oh, God bless you, child. God bless you. God bless
now
you.
Now say, she's drainable. Hermione and young Indiana Jones go to school.
And
the price.
Boom. There you go. I am not sure if this is going to be one gigantic show or if this is going to be a show that we actually try to break up into two parts, because I can't think of a single thing we can edit out of
that
show. It's all gold, baby. All gold. Like Trump Hotel. Anyway,
that's all Chinese steel.
Yeah.
The mood in the room
just
dropped.
It's not that kind of podcast. Please.
Hey, phrasing.
Anyway.
You have some bad hombres
in this room.
We got some nasty women.
We got plenty of nasty women
in this
room.
Three nasty women and one bad hombre.
Now there's a spinoff podcast. There's,
oh my God. The three nasty women and one bad hombre podcast. I am on it.
Yes.
You got a thought on that podcast? 703-791-1701. Tell us what the content of Three Nasty Women and One Bad Hombre podcast should be.
Nobilis, we give you the right to write that.
So, just a quick note about the Maryland Renaissance Festival. You can find them at RenFest. That's RENNFEST.com. Saw some familiar faces.
They won't be open again until next year.
That's what I was getting to. They're not on the day of this recording. This is their last day. They usually open the last weekend of August. They run from the last end of August, last weekend of August, all the way through to October.
Nine weeks.
Nine weekends. And it's a good time. It's a good time in Crownsville, Maryland. The people that are there, a good friend of mine, Thomas Plott, he just celebrated his 30th year there. And he is still doing what he did when I was there, which was stage combat. And when it comes to stage combat, Tom Plott is truly one of the baddest of the bad hombres.
Wow.
And he's a great guy. So end of the year, do you all have anything planned? Any cons you're going to be heading to? Or is it just going to be a coast to the end of the year?
Coast to the holidays.
Well, Scribby and I just moved.
We're so tired.
So we literally, last weekend, we threw everything in a truck because we were living at my parents' place.
Seriously cool digs, though.
Which is it's really, really cool. We have two buildings, and I had been living in one for a little while since I went back to school. Scribby's lease ended, and
we were waiting for our new lease to begin
because we wanted to move in together again and be roommates. And so I just said, why don't you save rent money and just come live with me for a while and commute? And so that's what we did. And so just last week, we were finally able to move into our new place, which is beautiful and completely unpacked. Or not completely unpacked. It's half unpacked and the rest is just completely unpacked.
And for your mom, there's at least one room.
One pretty room. There is one pretty room. She needed one room to be pretty before she left.
Yeah, and then this weekend I went on a work retreat and then immediately got out of one 4-hour car ride and rolled into Scribe's car.
Yeah.
So next weekend I work all weekend. But the weekend after that, I am so looking forward
to just
laying
right
on the floor like a slug.
So we've been trying to slowly unpack. So I think the rest of the year is going to be a combination of unpacking things, getting our new place in order. You have a couple more trips to see people.
Heading back up this way to see an old roommate who's fantastic. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that as far as social gatherings, I think especially from Boom had an absolute blast at New Year's Eve last year.
Yeah, it was
and
amazing.
And she really wants to get the band back together. And I think yes, Ashley's including. Yes. Yeah, she wants to get, yes. get you
and
back
I
the band. To
say, I need Scribby and Katie to meet.
Oh, dear Ooh, God.
We need to make
heaven.
That happen.
Because Katie really wants to meet Scribby because she's
I
heard
I really
want to
meet Katie.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we can make that happen.
We can yes. make that happen. If so, we could get the band back together and do that again, that was some fun
because
times.
I feel like they would be very good friends.
We'd have a lot.
Katie is kind of like my Canadian Scribby,
yeah.
who is also a writer, and yeah. So
I'd have to get another one of these headphone amplifiers, though, because but that would mean we would be cramming a lot of people in this studio.
We've had six people in this room before,
and
that's right.
And it was hard to juggle. It was yes. real hard yes. to juggle because yes. everyone was like switching headphones.
Well, what you do is you break it up into two. You go like take three down, and yeah. you need to record.
There
and,
is that. There is that.
Or you just I don't know get one
so,
of them.
So, yeah.
Sounds like madness and fun.
Headphone splitters.
Yeah. So, as far as we're concerned, we actually have one more event.
One more time.
Event for the year.
Where are you going?
One more time. We're going to Philadelphia. No, we're not.
No, we're not
we're
going to Philadelphia.
We're going to PhilCon, which sounds like it's in Philadelphia.
It was in Philadelphia.
But it's not.
It's in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
So it's in spitting distance of
it's
Philadelphia.
It's in spitting distance of
Philadelphia. But it's in New Jersey.
Philadelphia. And that's November 18th to the 20th. We are going there specifically because...
CJ Cherry is going to be there, or CJ Chera, as my dad calls her, because she changed it. She put an H right. on the end of Cherry.
Right.
She wrote Chronicles of Morgaine, which is one of my favorite mm-hmm. books. And she's one of my, I would say, one of my inspirational writers that I read, and I was like, oh, so women, there can be strong female characters, and there can be complex plots, and there can be darkness, and I love it. So I'm there is a reasonable possibility of fangirling.
Yay. Yeah,
a reasonable possibility. And we need to do it because she is an older lady.
Oh, no.
She lives on the west coast.
Oh.
She doesn't get out east very often. Right. So I was like,
gonna do it.
These days.
So that's November 18th through the 20th, and we're gonna be there. You can find out more at philcon.org. Tentative programming for PhilCon 2016 is available for view, and Crown Plaza is nearly sold out. I believe we've already made the reservation, so we're good for that. We will double check. We also may be in the dealer's room. We sent them everything they needed for the dealer's room. We haven't heard anything in response. Typical.
Rout,
nah.
Yeah.
That happens with
conventions. So I may do a follow-up with them today.
But that's the last thing.
That's the last event for 2016. Then we start off 2017 straight out of the box because that's when MAGFest is going to be happening. And I know
the Pocono Writers Convention.
And the Pocono Writers Convention. We'll have details on that.
We have
upcoming
a slight
shows.
Breath. We have like December off.
We have December off, which means, but no, we don't have December off because we are... November, we're also going to be writing up Countless Hues of Crimson with a fabulous, fabulous cover models.
Hey.
And their bustiers all out in the world to see. What was the actual quote again that you gave us, Lauren, when we got that goal?
My boobs need to be on that cover.
And we made it happen.
And Verena, it's so sweet. Verena, I don't have her drop-in ready, but Verena Baratz, our other cover model, she was
Ich liebe dich, Verena.
Yeah. Verena was like, I am so in love with her boobs. And, and yet, but with Lauren, she recently said, I am obsessed with your jawline.
Uh-huh. So, I am obsessed with her jawline.
So, yeah, we're going to...
And Scribby could maybe actually have a conversation with her in German.
It's
very poorly.
It's absolutely fantastic, though. Through that oeuvre
uh-huh.
of Countless Hues and her model shot, she has met more people in our tribe through Facebook. She's now hooked up with Carrie Seidman.
That's how it happens.
I don't think I even know Carrie Seidman.
Oh, come on. You know Carrie Seidman. You've met her at Balticon. I know you have.
I'm sure I've met her, but yeah. I don't think we're friends on Facebook, and I don't think
you
I've
need to remedy that.
Okay.
But the best thing
Hi,
is...
Hi, Carrie.
Between Carrie... I could just see the ultimate cosplay of anime between you, Carrie, and her, because Carrie does like epic scale anime stuff, and I could see the three of you doing some Final Fantasy shit that would just blow people's minds.
I have always wanted to be Beatrix from Final Fantasy IX.
Yeah. You and Verena need to talk then. So that's really about it. That's all we got here. So we're just going to go ahead and wrap up with where people can find you. So Lauren, where can people find you?
They can find me at www.laurenbharris.com or on Twitter @MarksMaster and on Instagram as the same.
And what about you, Scribby? They can find you on Facebook.
They might be able to find you at their local library, but they don't know.
They don't know. I was going to say, they can find me in the bedroom next door to hers. What about our podcast?
Oh, yeah. So eventually we're going to restart our podcast.
Hey now, Pendragon Variety?
Yeah. Not Pendragon Variety, but Scribby was on Pendragon Variety.
Yeah, I thought that was not your jam. That was not y'all's jam.
No, the two of us. I mean, we did it as a group.
We did it as a group of six girls. But Scribby and I have a podcast together that we have a couple of episodes out on, but then I was in school and we had to scale back. But it's called Fandom PhD.
Oh, nice.
And we delve into the fandom thing through usually like a feminist and literary eye.
Oh,
and it's so fun.
So is there a URL yet, or is it
fandomphd.com or
it's in the show. It's,
you
we'll
can
look it up.
You can Google Fandom PhD. We're up there.
We're on Tumblr. We use Tumblr as the actual platform instead of something like WordPress.
Interesting.
So
Tumbles.
We do Tumbles. But our website is hosted out of Tumblr.
Got it.
But now that we're living back together, it's starting back up.
Yay!
Our first return episode is our friend Chris Bird, who is one of my friends from college, he's never read Harry Potter.
Oh my God.
And he's never seen any of the movies.
Wow.
So
does such a thing exist?
Yes. And his name is Chris Bird.
He's a sparkly unicorn of
Yes. Wow. And so we had him sit down and record before we forced the first book on him.
Yeah.
And record what his everything about like what he thinks the first or what he thinks Harry Potter is about. We asked him things like what's a muggle? What house are you in? And things like that. Just got his impressions of things based on just the milieu of the internet.
Fantastic.
So did I tell you, just as an aside to that, have you done your houses online? What are you?
I am a Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
And in Ilvermorny, I'm whichever one is, I think I'm the serpent.
Uh-huh.
The gemstone-eyed serpent.
Uh-huh.
And in the one where it tells you which combination of houses you are, I'm most definitely a Ravendor.
A Ravendor? What about you, Scribby?
I'm mostly a Hufflepuff.
Really? She's a proud Hufflepuff.
On the combo one,
that
I'm
means
a
we've
Huffleclaw.
We got all of them.
We've
got
all.
I'm Slytherin.
Hey. Now, oh my God, we have a full house.
Yeah, and I'm Gryffindor.
You're Gryffindor.
I'm Gryffindor. I haven't done the wand yet, though. I haven't done the wand.
Oh, my wand is awesome.
And my Patronus was a style of cat. It was like a fluffy.
Oh,
it was a fluffy cat. It was a fluffy cat.
I got an Irish wolfhound.
Yeah.
I think I'm an osprey.
I'm a hare.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember Boom was a little upset. I was like, why'd you get a cat? I'm like, oh, just relax, girl.
Yeah.
But anyway.
My wand is the same wand wood as Rebus Lupin's. So Cypress.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we'll have to, we'll definitely have to return to that and get another man. If you want guests on your show, we love to whore ourselves that
Let's
way.
Let's do it.
Oh, awesome.
Oh
my God, I just realized that we could do a Founders.
What? We could?
Founders cosplay.
Oh my God.
Please. You'd have to play Salazar Slytherin.
I can see that.
You can do a femme one.
I can see that.
Femme Salazar Slytherin, and then.
Oh boy.
I need to make sure you also see another friend of ours, Alita Pardalis. I think I'm pronouncing that properly.
She did a beautiful
Rowena Ravenclaw. Steampunk Rowena Ravenclaw.
With actual.
Oh, you're mine.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yes.
I've seen that online.
Peacock feathers.
Unbelievable. It's beautiful. So, just in closing, remember, the Share Desk is protected by a non-commercial, no-derivative, share-alike, United States 3.0 license. You can find out more about this license at creativecommons.org. You can contact Pip at...
pip@pjballantyne.com.
You can contact me at t@tmorris.com. You can also hit that voicemail at 703-791-1701. And as always, thanks for listening. We do appreciate it. We love your voicemail. We'd like to hear from you. Yes, we know we have a backlog of some other voicemails that have been sent in the past. We will be getting to those eventually at some show. But until that time, enjoy the ride.
Catch you later.